Good morning. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Hope your day started well. We have a lot to talk about in the program today. Coming up later, Southern California's important place in the evolution of the amusement park. We all know Disneyland and Knott's Berry Farm's important places in that history, but L.A. attractions were around long before. We'll talk with Steven Silverman, author of the new book, The Amusement Park. That's later this hour. First, tensions are high between some L.A. City Council members and leaders of neighboring cities. The not surprising source of the bad blood, explosive growth in homelessness. We saw a 16% jump in the city of L.A.'s homeless population in the annual census released last week. The west side of L.A. was a major driver of that growth. Now, a pair of L.A. city councilmen are accusing neighboring cities of pushing their homeless residents into L.A. With us, KPCC housing and homelessness reporter Matt Tinoco. Matt, good to have you with us. First of all, when did the sniping begin on Facebook?
It began a couple weeks back, and sort of at the core of it, there's a court decision that came down from the Ninth Circuit, and the appeal was denied earlier this year, that basically says cities are not allowed to enforce laws that basically prohibit sleeping on public property. There was a court case a few years back that just finished through the Ninth Circuit called Martin v. Boise, where it was a group of homeless individuals sued the city of Boise for basically ticketing them for sleeping in public parks. Ninth Circuit said that is a violation of the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment. Those sort of conduct laws amount to cruel and unusual punishment. So where we are now, as you said, the sniping between local government officials, the city of L.A. says that it's compliant with the Boise decision, which means that they say that they are not citing people for sleeping or sitting on the sidewalk. Other cities around Southern California, however, continue to do that. And the effect of what the L.A. officials and other, in this case, Torrance, I think that's where we're going. L.A. says, OK, well, we're compliant with this decision, but other cities around Southern California, they're not compliant. They continue citing people and saying, OK, well, you know what? Just go to the city of L.A. They're not going to ticket you there. They're not going to enforce the laws there but we are. So the tension right now is L.A. says, OK, well, we're compliant with Boise. Other cities around the region are not compliant with Boise, which that has the effect of people gravitating towards Los Angeles because the laws here will, in theory, not be enforced.
I was looking at David Zonizer and Durrani Pineda's piece in the LA Times where they interviewed some of the homeless residents who were along the Culver City, LA City border. And the homeless residents were claiming Culver City police were kind of shooing them to the other side of La Cienega or saying, you know, you can't do it here. Go ahead in LA. You can do it there. And those sorts of anecdotal accounts also seem to be fueling this.
There's anecdotes all the way down, I suppose that's what you could say. And also distinct the laws that say you cannot sit or sleep on the sidewalk. There's a whole host of other sort of conduct laws that can be enforced. And then also just the reality is a lot of people, because you get a citation, people miss the court dates, that turns into a bench warrant. So the effect can sort of be, okay, well, unless you comply, we're going to pick you up and enforce that bench warrant, which it's a little more abstract than just this. But in terms of the nature of how people get moved around from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, it's sort of the threat of enforcement versus actual enforcement itself.
Since I began with the Culver City example, let me bring into our conversation Captain from the Culver City Police Department, Sam Agaibi. Captain, thank you for being with us. Your response to the claim that your officers are pushing Culver City's homeless into L.A.?
Good morning. What I say to that is that we are responsive to the issue that we have. We have a problem of homelessness in L.A., not just in Culver City. And we respond to calls for service from our residents and business owners and patrons throughout the day. We get a lot of calls throughout the month. We did a recent survey of our calls for service related to homelessness. Since January to April of 2019, we've had approximately 800 radio calls of related to mental health and homelessness. Out of those, probably about 26, which is almost 3%, that ended up in citations. So most of our radio calls are or issues related to that are handled with an emphasis on outreach and trying to help resolve the problem. And we understand that enforcement isn't going to necessarily solve that problem. So we have a heavy emphasis on outreach and providing resources to the homeless. We have a team that is dedicated to doing so, our mental health and homelessness outreach team. We have a clinician that is assigned to us from the LA County Mental Health Department that goes out on a regular basis with our patrol officers for that purpose. We're looking to expand that effort. So that is my
okay.
long and short answer to that long issue or extensive issue.
But are there any of your officers who have shooed homeless residents out of Culver City into Los Angeles? Are you aware of that anecdotal claim?
It is anecdotal. We have not received any complaints from any homeless individuals that they have been shooed away. And in fact, we get nothing but praise about our efforts from the community, from the homeless outreach committee that the city has put together. And in fact, we have a housing specialist within the city that has never received a complaint. She's on a regular basis contact with the homeless individuals in the community. And that is an entity that is outside of our department. So we have not received any complaint about such an issue.
Joaquin writes on the Air Talk page, my guess is Culver City's policy isn't substantially different than LA's. Their response is just faster and more frequent. So homeless residents stay away from Culver City, largely to be left alone. That's Joaquin on the Air Talk page, 866-893-KPCC, or the Air Talk page, kpcc.org. In case you just joined us, two LA City Council members, Mike Bonin, who represents the West Side, including Venice, and Joe Buscaino represents the harbor area of L.A. They claim neighboring cities have encouraged their homeless residents to move into Los Angeles, putting more stress on the homeless population there as well as city services. My question for you as a listener, is this something that you've observed? We're at 866-893-KPCC, Air Talk page, kpcc.org. Also with me is Laura MD, who's Redondo Beach City Council member. Thank you very much, Councilwoman, for being with us. Your response to the claim that the beach cities are pushing homeless residents into LA.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. In Redondo Beach, homelessness is not a crime, and we don't treat them as such. We created a homeless task force with a 360-degree strategy, which includes not only abiding by the law, but being service-based. So we contacted our neighborhood we're coordinated with our faith-based neighborhoods who are focused on feeding the homeless only at the time. And we've guided them towards helping us create a way to get a path to get them to not be homeless anymore. We also contracted our own dedicated navigator with Harbor Interfaith. We've provided extensive trainings to our police officer, and we even have a specialized team that has been working with mental health professional. And just like Culver City, we have a mental health clinician that travels with our police department to be able to help out the homeless to get them into beds where we can. In addition, in our 2019-2020 budget, they're asking for more money so that we can have our quality of life prosecutor go attend cases in downtown LA. We're going to have even more specialized programs to be able to help out the homeless.
All right. Let's.
The thing is we don't have enough beds. Is really what it comes down to, and that's a regional issue.
Councilwoman, what do you do if you have someone who has set up to sleep overnight on a city street or in a public park? What are the terms under which you allow the person to sleep on public property? What are the things that would cause the individual to be removed?
Only if they have. If they've done some kind of a crime, have they threatened another individual? They had to have had a crime. We don't treat them as criminals. They are allowed to sleep there per the law. We do bring out an entire team of mental health professionals. We bring out PATH. We bring out our specialized police team, and we do to try to offer them the services that they need.
All right. So you do allow people, though, to sleep on the street, on the sidewalk overnight, or in public parks in Redondo Beach?
We have them now. Yes, we do.
We're talking with Laura Emdy, Redondo Beach City Council member, KPCC reporter Matt Tinoco. Matt, the claim is that these cities are taking people off the street, telling them they can't spend the night there.
I think it might be, in a sense, it might be legal to sleep on the sidewalk, but it might, I don't know the specific rules for Redondo Beach or the other cities in question. That requires a strict reading of the municipal codes. But just generally how this works. So it might be legal to sleep on the sidewalk in a place, but it might not be legal to have a tent. You might not be allowed to have personal property. There's a whole host of other sort of municipal code violations that can be invoked essentially to make people – it can be invoked that effectively means somebody has to move somewhere else, even if the line of code itself doesn't say no sitting or sleeping on the sidewalk.
And is the court silent on that issue of what it means to sleep on the sidewalk? Are you entitled to set up a tent, for example? Are you entitled to have your personal belongings there? Does the Boise decision get into what it means to sleep in a public space?
A strict reading of Boise says that you can't do no camping ordinances or no sitting on the sidewalk. That is strictly under the strictest reading of Boise. That is not okay. At a more liberal interpretation of Boise, Boise uses the phrase "you may not criminalize life-sustaining behavior," which that is something that would have to be clarified in the courts insofar as how it applies to individual municipalities in Southern California. But the most liberal interpretation of Boise says you cannot criminalize life-sustaining behavior, which that's a much broader thing that might encompass possession.
So a tent that might in dry weather be considered not essential for life sustaining might in a downpour be essential.
Yeah. And maybe there, I remember one of the attorneys telling me how there is a more liberal impression that it might actually apply to personal property. That's something that would have to be clarified in the courts. It's just right now we're talking anecdotally and it's somewhat abstract, but the core of Boise just says that you cannot enforce these laws against people living on the street because it's cruel and unusual punishment based on the premise that there is no other alternative.
All right. Let's take another call or let's bring another guest in. Councilman for the city of Torrance, Aurelio Matucci. Thank you very much, Councilman, for being with us. In Torrance, are homeless individuals allowed to sleep in public places and on sidewalks?
Well, right now we're not truly enforcing any of this. Of course, the court case from Boise, Idaho, kind of shed some light on what we can or cannot do for the future. But we did have somewhat of a stand-down approach so far.
So that means you're allowing people to stay overnight?
Yes and no. Tents on sidewalks, we are not allowing as of right now, mainly because they're blocking ADA access. But we are desperately looking for ways to help individuals into programs and truly not allowing them to just rot away on our city streets.
Okay. And what about personal belongings? Are people able to have some personal belongings with them if they're sleeping in a park or on a sidewalk? Or are those banned as being obstacles to access to those public spaces?
Well, we do have, you know, a certain leniency with certain things, like, you know, if it's personal products in a couple bags, a duffel bag or a backpack, that's not a big issue. But when they're hauling around stuff on shopping carts, we are enforcing a shopping cart thing because those are technically personal property that belongs to stores. So we are enforcing that. We do have a heart. We do feel that this is something that we need to do on a regional basis, because if not, cities like Manhattan Beach are just going to push people next to the next city over. But if we do it on a regional basis, I think it'll be a lot more effective to actually, I hate to say use push, you know, the verbiage push people into programs, but that's truly what we need to do. There's a lot of drug addiction on the street, mental illness on the street. And of course, you got those individuals that want to just live free. But there is a lot of refusal of services, and that's one of the biggest obstacles some organizations are having.
Councilman, what's your sense of the percentage of homeless people in Torrance who are from Torrance, who have a history with the city?
Very little, very few. As a matter of fact, in the last 2.5 years, we almost doubled. Now, of course, Los Angeles is going to laugh at us when we say we have a little over 200 homeless, but we're a city of a little over 147,000 people. We are relatively large. You know, we do contribute quite a bit. We have a lot of great organizations that do help out the homeless. You know, I do have a background in this. I'm the vice president of New Challenge Ministries. They're at a nonprofit that helps homeless in the area. We're based out of Torrance Post Office. It's not actually Torrance City. I've also served 2.5 years on the Social Services Commission that handles homeless and also veteran.
But your sense is the majority of the homeless Torrance residents have come from elsewhere. They're not natives of Torrance.
That's correct. And, okay. You know, when we try to track who's here, I just find it almost amusing to be that we're accused of pushing people out when, in fact, our population almost doubled in 2.5 years. So, yeah, we're not pushing people out. If we did that in the past, I can assure you that that's something that a lot of cities were doing before to try to contain the homeless into the L.A. Strip. But nowadays, I think we've corrected that. We're taking a much nicer approach, in my opinion, but definitely not a strong approach to where you're really going to entice people into programs.
All right. We're talking with Torrance Councilman Aurelio Matucci, Laura MD, Councilwoman Redondo Beach, Sam Agaibi is captain for the Culver City Police Department. We're talking about allegations from two L.A. City Council members, Mike Bonin and Council Member Joe Buscaino, who both declined a request to join us today, claiming that neighboring cities have been essentially pushing their homeless residents into Los Angeles. We're at 866-893-KPECC. We'll be back in 1 minute. Good to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Coming up, the history of amusement parks and Los Angeles' central role in that. We're going to talk about the ostrich races, the crocodile alligator farm, and much, much more. That's coming up on Air Talk. But right now, the challenge of homelessness and squabbling between Los Angeles and neighboring cities over claims that some of those neighboring communities have been pushing their homeless residents into the city of L.A. Deborah, in Venice, you're on Air Talk. Your thoughts about this?
Hi. Well, I'll start by saying that I believe that this is entirely the fault of Los Angeles for not containing the problem to begin with. It's also the fault of the state because they had Prop 47 and 57, early release of criminals, people who were once felons, came down to misdemeanors, and if they have $900 crimes or less, they're not prosecuted, basically, is what the police have said, at least in Los Angeles. I live in Venice, so I know firsthand of what's going on with regards to homelessness and how the police are trying to tackle the problem, but not really. So I think that our council people are frustrated, but that's no way to say now you take them when it really is the problem of Los Angeles. The other thing is this, Larry, that there's over almost $1 billion in the county from Prop 43, which was the high-income earners tax, that hasn't been touched by the state and by the county. And that was for mentally ill people. Now, for services, for buildings, they haven't touched it. And you have to ask yourself why. Because the homeless count that came out was saying that I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think about a third are serious mentally ill people that are just wandering the streets. And they are not being helped because those funds are not being used at all.
All right.
I find that rather insane.
All right, Deborah, just on the point about the police and the misdemeanors, I mean, we've talked about this a lot on the program because of that, what is it, $950 threshold. For officers to go through all the paperwork and everything to write someone up for a property crime of less than $950 when the person's not going to serve any time, or it, I mean, you understand where they're coming from, right? There's no return on that time investment.
Larry, I actually don't, and I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
Because it creates no deterrent. That's like saying that somebody who might have not much money, a car that costs $950 to somebody means the world to them. And for nothing to take place because somebody who is on the street or homeless or a criminal and they now consider it a misdemeanor, that's a major crime to somebody that doesn't have a lot of money and they get their car stolen just because their car is valued less.
All right, Deborah, I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. Culver City Police Captain Sam Agaibi. Just quickly for you, sir, do Props 5747, in your view, have any correlation with rising homelessness?
Yes. Anecdotally, I could say we haven't done any research to actually show that, but I could see a correlation between the time that happened and the increase in the homeless population. And often we've contacted individuals related to a radio call or a complaint of a crime, and they happen to be homeless, and they are on one of those programs related to Prop 4757.
So these are people that might have been incarcerated in past years that now are outside and don't have a means of support or have a place to live.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Becca in North Hollywood says, I drive through Glendale and Eagle Rock every day for work. In Glendale, I don't see homeless people. But as soon as I go into Eagle Rock, 20 yards from the Welcome to LA sign, there are encampments under the overpass. I've always wondered why. And now it makes sense. That's Becca in North Hollywood. Mark in Loma Linda, you're on Air Talk.
I've traveled across the United States quite a bit. I've noticed that while I'm in the Midwest, there's individuals that'll be asking me that are homeless, hey, can I just catch a ride with you so I can go back go over to California? It's so much easier out there. There's plenty of fruit on the trees. It's just falling and rotting on the floor. What does it matter for me, right? I've never given anybody a ride, but I can tell you I've been hit up a lot. I live across the street from a VA. I watch homelessness every day. I see individuals that's got mental health issues all the time. I've got a background in nursing and also public health. And I go out and I interview and I talk to these individuals. And I see that the number one problem in this area, which we've lived here for 6 years, it has more than doubled in just the Loma Linda area,
yeah,
which used to be a very small community. But now it's a lot of homelessness, a lot of drug use, mostly mental health issues that I see directly on our street.
Yeah, and it's happening in so many communities that perhaps didn't have anywhere near as visible a homeless population in the past. Mark, I appreciate it. I mean, historically, Southern California has been a place that people have come for economic opportunity or for the weather. And, you know, we've always had a homeless population here. We've had people living in Griffith Park for, you know, probably 100 years. But what's different is the scale. Is the huge number of people. And Matt Tinoco, as you were saying, what is it you said, is 19% or something like that are from out of state?
In the most recent homeless census.
Which is still a lot of people.
It's still a lot of people. It's just it's not the majority. It's actually it's less than a fifth are from out of state. And basically the uptick that we're seeing is just people falling off the bottom of the housing market and not having the resources to get back up on their feet.
Because now if you're going to come to Southern California, the cost of living is so much higher. That's a much tougher thing than when it was more comparable to the cost of living you'd find in other parts of the country. Let's talk with Acacia in Long Beach. You're on Air Talk.
Hi. Okay, so I'm with Cal State Long Beach, and I actually worked on a report on the homelessness in Long Beach, and myself and my team worked really closely with the homelessness community here and the different facilities and agencies that address homelessness. And I can tell you for a fact that many homeless individuals come from LA to Long Beach to receive services because Long Beach addresses homelessness completely differently than LA.
So it's actually a draw that Long Beach is able to provide more.
Yes, correct. We provide more services. There's a specific outreach team, a street team, that works through the Health and Human Services Department, and they go out on the streets and they outreach to the homeless individuals, offering them various services, and then they then work specifically with these individuals to get them into short-term housing, long-term housing, whatever services that they need. And then there is a specific department within the police department called the Quality of Life Officers that works specifically with the homeless individuals. As well as the HEART team, which is a specific department within the fire department that works specifically with homeless individuals.
Acacia, I appreciate your call. Matt Tinoco, it seems that a number of local police departments and cities are setting up these teams to go out and be able to triage homeless residents with needs.
Yeah, the premise of outreach is that we're going to work with people on the street to sort of get them into the system and connected to the services that we have available to them. This is done by police departments. This is done by NGOs. This is done by specific outreach teams by the cities that are not attached to an NGO, but are the city themselves. The trouble is that a lot of the times where we are right now is just there's so much more need than the help that's available. So the outreach team can go out and we can get the people into the system. But ultimately, you can do all the outreach you want, but that doesn't change the reality that there's not much to actually give. There's nowhere for people to go. That's the whole issue. We have a shelter infrastructure that is much – there's many fewer shelter beds than there are people who are outside. We don't have affordable housing stock available for these people to afford, basically. And so you can do all the outreach. Outreach is crucial in sort of bridging that trust. But the problem is that when we hear like, oh, well, they don't want to be helped. The reality is that people do want help. It's just that there's no it's a hopelessness situation because they've tried to get help. They've worked very, very hard to try and get help and try and resolve their situation, but at a certain point you just give up because nothing, your situation hasn't changed.
Well, and some people are in the throes of addiction and other people don't, because of mental health challenges, aren't really in a frame of mind to be able to take advantage of help.
Yeah, and the one thing I want to say, mental health and addiction are, it cannot be something to be ignored. I mean, you can't ignore it in this whole thing. But I want to clarify that, or at least in my, again, it's anecdotal, but just spending, I talk to people who are living outside a huge amount. Those are things that happen after people fall into the street, because living on the street, it's so physically and psychologically corrosive. Like, try and imagine, I want everybody, like, really try and imagine trying to sleep on a bus stop. Okay, whenever somebody drives by with a loud muffler, you're going to get woken up. You're not able to sleep. And that, do it for two nights, do it for three nights, do it for, okay, now do it a year. Like, you're just, it's not, your psychological well-being is just an active deterioration. That's what happens.
That's interesting. So many of the people that I've over the years talked with who are homeless, you know, describe on and off again battles with addiction and living with, you know, family members and friends for a while and burning out those relationships and, you know, running out of goodwill over time because of the challenges of addiction or mental health challenges, and obviously living on the streets doesn't make that any better. Matt Tinoco, housing and homelessness reporter for KPCC, thank you so much. And our thanks to our guest, Sam Agaibi, Culver City Police Captain, Aurelio Matucci, City of Torrance Councilman, and Laura Emdy, Redondo Beach City Council member. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Coming up, Southern California's central place in the development of the American Amusement Park. Back after a live update from Hetty Lynn Herdes.